Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Sign up to our loyalty programme and reap the rewards at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
That actually does bring us in a way to our first guest this morning, because I think you are all going to have an opinion on this. Deepa Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Brendan. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Welcome to the show. It's great to have you. So Deepa, you've written a memoir called Ask Me How It Works, and it's about you and your marriage and how you opened up your marriage initially to lots of other people. And most recently, you have, I suppose, settled down, so to speak, with just your husband, Marcus, and your Irish boyfriend, do I call him, Robert?
Absolutely. Boyfriend of almost 6 years now.
OK, so as the title of the book suggests, we just to get the rules of engagement clear here, you're happy to be asked about your life and your situationship. So can we agree, Deepa, that I'm going to ask you a load of nosy questions now? I'm not asking them in any judgmental way, just a spirit of open curiosity. OK.
Absolutely. That's fair. I mean, the book is called Ask Me How It Works. And I guess I'm literally an open book. So yeah, let's go for it.
OK. So, yeah, look, for a lot of people, for most of us, this is a very different set of choices you've made. Are people a bit judgy in general, do you find, or are they kind of just amiably nosy about it?
Curiosity is definitely the first reaction most people have. You know, the book I wrote takes up maybe 10 or 12 of the most frequently asked questions I receive about being in an open marriage. And they're kind of the same questions over and over again. You know, how does it work? How did it start? How did you start talking about it? What about jealousy? And I think questions are really interesting because they reveal so much about the asker,
yes,
as well as the person being asked.
Okay,
you know,
there's, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So I am now about to reveal so a lot about myself and my small-minded Irish Catholic upbringing. You see, the interesting thing about this is the background to your journey is growing up in the Philippines, and that was quite conservative in a way that might be vaguely familiar to some Irish people. So you were taught, I think, as a young woman, as a girl, that your body was sinful, and also lots of hypocrisy and secrecy around marriage as well. Tell me a bit about that culture and how it shaped you.
So I grew up in the Philippines, and it's extremely conservative, extremely Catholic. Fun fact, it's one of two remaining countries in the world where divorce is illegal. The other one being Vatican City, population 865.
Okay.
So, you know, this really particular culture shaped a lot of my attitudes, well, most of my attitudes towards and the body and intimacy and relationships. I grew up seeing, you know, I grew up in a... I went to a Catholic school for girls for 17 years. And the
nuns, was it?
Nuns, absolutely. Yeah. Nuns everywhere. And the message was, you know, if you are curious, even curious about sex, curious about relationships, about boys, about the other, you know, the opposite sex, and about your own body, it makes you bad, wrong, and sinful. The body is something to be hidden. You know, marriage is... Yeah, interesting about marriage as well is, you know, I was taught that it's sacred. It makes sex okay. Like, sex before marriage is terrible, but afterwards it's supposed to be fantastic, you know, holy and everything you ever dreamed of. And also there was a lot of secrecy around and double standards around marriage as well. You know, we were supposed to save ourselves for marriage, save our bodies for our husbands, and kind of when you got there, you realized men didn't grow up with the same messages we did as girls. So I grew up kind of questioning all of these things and figuring out that I was a bit different, or maybe a lot different from, you know, the people around me. And I learned to, you know, to fit in, to play by the rules and to say, okay, well, this is what everybody's doing. I should do this too. This is the way to be a good person and a good woman in this society.
Okay. And just before we continue with that thread of you, your father took his own life as well when you were young, something you didn't know until much later. How does that affect you?
I grew up listening to stories of my mother talking about my father, and theirs was my favorite love story. You know, he was from India. He'd come to the Philippines as a very poor management student. They met and they fell in love. And all I had growing up were stories of my father. So the stories that I heard from her were of them as a team. that marriage was an adventure, that you would always be on, you know, have each other's backs, have each other, you know, be on each other's side no matter what happened. And this was very, very different from what I was hearing about marriage from everywhere else. When I became a mother and, you know, gave birth to my daughter at the age of 35, my mother suddenly started opening up to me in a way that I felt maybe she thought I could finally understand the challenges that she'd been going through as a mother and a wife. And I found out at the age of 35, I had a lot of feelings. I had a lot of feelings about, you know, the way I'd grown up and what I'd come to believe about marriage and love and commitment. And I think this was the push that got me writing. Okay. There had to be a way to process all of these feelings and these emotions and re-looking at memories and stories that I had grown up with. Questioning them.
Yes,
and,
yes.
Yeah.
So the assumed reality you'd grown up with it all turned out to have been not strictly true. So look, kind of fast forward a bit. You met your husband, Marcus. Mm-hmm. He had a period of a long-distance relationship. Then you moved to Amsterdam.
Right.
I think your initial foray into meeting people online was driven by loneliness, was it?
It was driven by curiosity. I fell into a rabbit hole called the Craigslist personal ads. I don't know if you had Craigslist in Ireland. Like, it was kind of an early 2000s where I was selling furniture.
We mainly swapped chests of drawers and stuff.
But, yeah. Exactly. I was selling furniture for our move to Amsterdam, and I fell into the personal ads, which were an absolute rabbit hole of secret desires. I became incredibly curious about these things, 99% of which I'd never heard of, and started wondering, what do people find exciting about this? Are people walking around with all of these secret unexplored desires and just not talking about them? So I started reading them, you know, kind of like a romance novel, a fantasy novel that kept refreshing itself every so often, and just became so curious about these experiences that at some point I said, okay, I want to try some of these things. And Amsterdam seemed like the perfect place. It's one of the most liberal cities in the world. People are very open about their, you know, their sexuality, their sexual, their beliefs, their, and there's just such a high level of tolerance and just liberal mindedness here.
What did your early experimentation look like, roughly?
Well, when I brought it up with my husband, he was less than pleased with the idea that we would be going out to explore some of these things that I'd been reading about. You know, I was curious about why do people find threesomes exciting? What is exciting about dominance and submission? What is exciting about going to a party where, you know, everyone is kind of going at it with everyone else's partners? What is so cool and exciting and thrilling about this? He wasn't thrilled. And so it took quite a big crisis of trust, let's say, for us to really look at what we wanted out of our marriage, out of our, you know, out of our intimate life, how we wanted to go forward together. And kind of the solution that we came up with at the time was to go on Tinder. And when I say Tinder now, I feel like this is really, really. Yeah.
Tell me about that process a little bit. So obviously he kind of, I suppose, found out something about you and all that. And you went into, I think, a therapeutic process. But how was it decided, or who decided, that you would both start seeing other people?
The process we went through was really not therapy per se. It was this kind of communication called nonviolent communication, where we learned to articulate our own needs, like his and mine, and hold up both sets of needs with equal validity. You know, my needs were for sexual variety, adventure, exploration, and discovery. And he wanted stability, security, to feel like our marriage was a priority. So kind of putting both sets of needs together, we had to figure out, okay, how are we going to move forward with both of these in mind? And the idea, you know, my proposal for him was for me to explore on my own and let him know everything, you know, with complete transparency and honesty. And he was like, hold on, if you're going to do this, then I'm in it with you. We were parents of a very young child at the time. I think our daughter was maybe 3 or just about to turn 4. We had no time to cruise bars or go to swingers parties, you know, when we had a really young child at home and no babysitter. So we decided, let's go the digital way and let's open Tinder accounts. You know, let's set some ground rules and see what we can find from
here. What are the ground rules at that point?
The first rule and ironclad rule is safe sex always. So we agreed to use barrier methods, condoms all the time with other partners, and to get regularly tested for STIs. The second rule was not to bring any sexual partners into our home, so to keep our home as a sacred space for our family life. We had a rule about sleepovers. Like at the time, we felt sleeping over with someone and waking up next to them was too intimate to share mm-hmm. with any partner other than each other. No friends, can't get messy. No colleagues, even messier, as we are now discovering with the biggest news on today's broadcast. And we capped the frequency of dates at maximum once a week.
Okay.
So these were the ways to make something that felt like uncharted territory and full of uncertainty feel safer.
To put boundaries on it. I think Marcus uh-huh. found it harder than you initially did. But part of it was because you were having more success meeting people, I think.
I definitely did. I was really surprised, and I think he was too, that it's so much easier for women to find dates online than it is for men. A lot of people ask me, oh, you know, it's usually men who are opening up their marriages. And from people that I've spoken to, it's men who are finding out that, oh, wait, my woman is having more success than this, at this than I am. I want to go back. But at the time, yeah, I just threw myself into it. And he discovered that women were not exactly thrilled to be dating someone who wanted no strings attached, intimacy.
Yeah, that's a different looking prospect in a man. I can see that. Listen,
absolutely.
There are things that people would think are challenging here. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know, you describe you getting dressed up to go out on a date in front of him. And then you get to a point where you tell each other about dates, within certain parameters and stuff. There must be mm-hmm. jealousy there, is there?
Jealousy is definitely something that comes up. Maybe now that we've been in an open marriage for almost 10 years, it doesn't really come up in anymore. But in those kind of early figuring it out roller coaster years, jealousy was definitely a factor. For my husband, it was the feeling of, maybe the fear that maybe she's auditioning for my replacement with all of these kind of hot, interesting men that she's dating. And for me, it was quite the opposite. I remember him going out on his first date and me not really feeling threatened, or I was even kind of excited for him to have, kind of a revelatory experience or just to have fun on his own so he could relate to what I was feeling. And I remember thinking to myself, I'm not jealous at all. Does that mean I don't love him? Because we're taught that the greater the love we have for someone, then the greater the jealousy is as well. But I just realized that I loved him in a different way, that I wanted him to have experiences that were transformative, exciting, and that I didn't need to be the owner of all those experiences.
Okay. And did he embrace seeing other people to the same extent that you did ultimately, yeah?
No, I think we figured out that we are quite different in that sense. I think he likes having once in a while a nice casual connection. A lot of the people he's dated have become close friends, which I also think is really wonderful. Not all dating leads to, physical intimacy or just the kind of diversity and multiplicity of the relationships and connections we can have.
Okay, yeah.
Has just been amazing.
Okay. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So look, in that phase of things, you weren't supposed to, I think the phrase is, catch feelings for other people. So was it just about sex in that phase?
In the beginning, I was really excited about all of the different kinds of sexual experiences I could have. But as that went on, I had experiences with casual connections that left me feeling, first of all, unsafe, unfulfilled. And ultimately, I realized that if I was, up for treating people transactionally, that opened me up to being treated like an object and transactionally as well. So I wanted to move towards more meaningful connections where I would see someone regularly for, a span of time, months. And this was something that my husband also grew comfortable with as he realized not only our marriage deserved safety, but I deserved safety as well. And opening myself up to really seeing how I felt about someone, you know, it was very gratifying because I could decide what a connection meant to me and how I wanted to move forward with it over a period of time.
Yeah. And it's a different, that's a different ball game though. Like if I was Marcus, I'd be thinking, no, this is not, I signed up for kind of meaningless, you know, or less meaningful connections. Now you're getting into parallel relationships. You could see how that's slightly more of a threat maybe to the spouse.
Yes, I can see that. And I could see that at the time that it was happening. But, you know, as I said, this all unfolded over a period of 10 years, right?
Yeah.
So it didn't happen overnight. And it's also something that I would not have been comfortable with overnight. And by the time this happened, maybe this was around, I don't know, year 4 or 5 of our open marriage, we had just developed a communication that was really, really intimate. You know, if I was feeling a certain way about a certain connection, I was very transparent about that. He could ask me anything about what I felt about someone, how I wanted to take this connection forward, what was in it for me. And he could also ask for his needs around, you know, jealousy. Hey, I'm feeling insecure because you're spending time with this guy. You know, can we have more quality time for us? Or I miss this about us. Can we do this? And it was a way that he wasn't used to reacting in the beginning, where the jealousy would just, you know, it would make you freeze up, or it's a very visceral feeling, a very visceral reaction. But as that calmed and settled over time, you know, there were needs behind that jealousy. I want to spend more time with you. I want you to be as excited about me as you seem to be about this other person. And learning to communicate that was an absolute game changer for our marriage.
Wow. You we're doing a lot of managing here. So tell me about Robert. He's a photographer from Dublin. How did you meet Robert and how did that relationship develop?
I met Robert on Tinder in December of 2019, so just shortly before everything shut down for COVID. And, you know, he was charming. He is charming. I think this is like an Irish national trait. And we just had a lot of fun together. We are both creatives. He's a photographer and I'm a writer. So we had a lot of things in common and things to connect to. And when COVID happened and lockdown happened, he was one of a few casual connections I had at the time. And, you know, COVID just shut everything down. My life was really constricted to, as all of our lives were, was constricted to home and family. And then at some point I was thinking, okay, this is going to go on for a while. I need to normalize something about my life. I need to find connections that I trust, you know, not my close friends, but, you know, just try to normalize social life so I don't go insane. And Robert was, you know, and is a deeply trustworthy and good man. And I felt safe with him, at ease with him. So I spoke to Marcus about that. I said, I'd like to go on seeing Robert. I think he's being very responsible about his socializing. You know, he's a really, really good man and I trust him. And again, this kind of, you know, talking about it, talking about how that made us feel, how that made him feel, it was a bit of a negotiation in the beginning, but he saw that I needed more than what was just at home, than being a wife and mother 24/7, to really, you know, feel myself and feel alive. And he said, okay, you know, if you trust him, then, you know, just go for it. We became close in what I like to call the emotional pressure cooker of lockdown.
Didn't feel that you putting all that energy and attention elsewhere was diminishing your marriage?
No, he didn't, because, you know, the hours I spent with Robert in lockdown were, it was an evening a week. And for the rest of the week, we were solidly a team. You know, we were homeschooling our daughter. He could see that there was a lot of energy and love and attention put into our, you know, our marriage and our family life at home. And if I had these few hours a week outside of that, then it didn't diminish from what we had and what I was giving to, you know, him and our daughter.
So did you fall in love with Robert?
Absolutely, I did. I mean, this is why we're still together 6 years later. So
Robert see other people, or has he anyone else in his life?
And currently, no.
Okay. And has he since you've been together?
Yeah, he has gone out on a few dates He has, yeah. That's
okay.
That came up a few years ago. So,
and so, is everyone now happy with the setup as it is? I think at one point Robert was kind of the one who was saying he wanted a bit more commitment, not for you to leave Marcus, but he wanted more commitment from you. Does everyone feel they're getting enough from everybody in the situation now?
I find it very hard to speak about, you know, the men, speak for the men in my life. Maybe they need to write their own books.
Do they seem happy?
They seem happy. I mean, okay. It's all, you know, it's all working. I think no relationship, whether it's monogamous or non-monogamous, is ever going to be 100% perfect and happy. But, you know, it's all working. We have our up days and our down days, just like any relationship. And sometimes we give more and sometimes we have less to give. But I think it all kind of balances out.
Is it hard work for you, Deepa? Like, a lot of us find keeping up one relationship is, you know, it's not draining, but like it requires effort and investment and everything. Is keeping up two substantial relationships like double that?
That is an interesting question. Do I find that it's work? It is work, but it is work that I find fulfilling and gratifying. It starts with me having a great relationship with myself, really understanding, you know, understanding my own needs and desires and really delving into, you know, questions that I've never, you know, really thought of as new situations continue to come up in my life and my relationships. I think I'm a bit of an overthinker, which makes me probably a good memoir writer.
Yeah.
So this is the self-examination and the reflection, I think, comes naturally to me. That work comes naturally to me and I enjoy it. As for the kind of maintenance of the relationships, you know, I'm very lucky to be with two grown, mature, self-aware men who, you know, really pull their weight as far as emotional, mental, and even domestic labor is concerned. So I would say it doesn't feel like work to me.
And how is the relationship between Robert and Marcus now? Are they friends?
Yes, they are. They have a healthy respect for each other. You know, once in a while they get together or they bump into each other or I've had a lot of book events that they both show up for. And someone told me about this term called garden party polyamory, where they're not required to be best friends, but, you know, it's like the people you see at a garden party every so often. You have like a very civil relationship with them and you're like, hey, you know, how are you doing? Oh, great. And they have a beer and there's a lot of genuine good regard between the two of them, which is beautiful to see.
Okay. Now, there's a lot of the texts from listeners are mixed. There's one text here from a woman who's saying, it's one thing to engage in these types of behavior and relationships when one isn't a parent, but totally unacceptable when they have a child. So how old is your daughter and what is her understanding of all this?
My daughter's 12 years old. She'll be going to high school next year. And this is a concern I hear a lot from people, which is why the last chapter of my book is, what do you tell your daughter? And, you know, we've never been fully open about sexual details because I think when you're a parent, right? I mean, which parent shares the details of their sex lives? But when I started sleeping over at Robert's, for example, it was during COVID when we had a curfew and I said, okay, I'm going over to Robert's, but, you know, I'm not going to come back before the curfew ends. And I'm going to sleep over there. And she said, okay, well, you're sleeping over. In her mind, there was a working knowledge of sleepovers as something fun that you did with friends. You know, and the next morning she was like, how was your sleepover? Did you have fun? And I said, absolutely, I did. And now that she's 12, we kind of stuck the label on, you know, on the relationship when things were starting to happen with the book. So I knew that the book was going to come out and that there would be coverage on it in the media, and I wanted her to get it from me and not from anywhere else. So I sat her down. I had this conversation with her, which I had in the book and which I write about. And her response is, I mean, children are amazing. She got it, and then she said, okay, this is as much as I want to know for now. And I said, okay, do you have any questions? And she was like, no. And I said, do you know that you can ask me anything at any time? She said, yeah, I know. And I think the kind of the underpinning of all of this is that she's seen that Marcus and I have a secure marriage, that we love each other. We're very affectionate with each other. We're very, you know, deeply, deeply, yeah, just compatible. She sees that every single day, and she's secure in that knowledge, and she knows that we love her as well. So she knows Robert exists. You know, she knows that he's in and out of our lives. He's not part of our family life, which was an important boundary for all three of us. But for her, the security of being in a loving family has always been there.
And okay. I'm looking at the text here, Deepa. And
sure.
I'm thinking about some Irish people and their reaction to this. You've been to Dublin and met Robert's family here, am I right? What do they make of the arrangement?
I've met Robert's family, and I'm very close to Robert's sister. So she's kind of the closest I am, the closest family member. I remember her sitting me down once on a family holiday that I joined, and she said, look, you know, this is not what we're used to. This is not something that I really understand, but I see that he's the happiest he's ever been. So I don't quite get it, but all right. You know, and different family members and friends will have different reactions.
Yeah.
The most important thing is, you know, Robert is a fully grown adult. He makes his own decisions, and there are people who will support him, and there are people who will be less understanding. And I think that's true of any family dynamic. So you find your support where you find it, and do your best.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. Look, we're all only doing our best. Deepa, thank you so much. And thank you for being so open about everything there. Like, you didn't shut down one question there. And the book is called Ask Me How It Works. It's absolutely fascinating. It's published by Penguin Viking. Deepa Paul, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brendan. Thanks for your curiosity. It's been great to be here.
Thank you.